Welcome to Straight Thinking, a GPS for the Christian mind, teaching you how to think, not just what to think. This is Average Joe Aguirre with theologian and philosopher Kenneth Samples and physicist Dave Rogstad. On today's podcast, has Christianity been a force for good? And how so? This is part two of two. Ken, you've been addressing the claim that Christianity has not been good or not even true for some people. Maybe you can remind us the ground we covered last time and then get us up to speed this time. Before you do that, I might add, by the way, by my reckoning, this is podcast number 400 of Straight Thinking. So we can all celebrate 400 episodes of Straight Thinking.
Wow, that is a lot of podcasting.
Yeah. Now, we've done more than that because we did Imago Dei for some time. And that's my rough reckoning. We'll call it 400 and celebrate and go from there. So congratulations.
Well, you know, if in baseball terms, if you hit 500 home runs, you make the Hall of Fame.
So. All right. Well, we'll shoot for 500.
That's great. That's some would say that's a lot of hot air to 400. Well, Joe and Dave, what we've been talking about, particularly last week, is really kind of something that I have been working on with the new book. In April, God willing, given all the things that have happened to our world over the last year, you really do need to say that if it's in accord with the will of God. But the publishing plans are that my new book, Christianity Cross-Examined, will be released in April of 2021, which is just a couple short months away. But in that book, I spend the first half talking about why I think Christianity is reasonable, and I spend the second half arguing why I think Christianity is good. And in our last program, guys, I talked a little bit about two kinds of unbelievers. Now, I posited them as atheists, but since I've been talking and thinking about this, I wonder if maybe it would be better to characterize them as agnostics, because an agnostic kind of traditionally would say, I don't know if there's a God. An atheist would say, really, I do know, and there isn't. But if we posited two types of non-believers, one is a person who says, look, there may be some reason to believe in God, but I don't want that God to exist. I don't prefer that reality. I think of Thomas Nagel, who kind of said that he was troubled that some of his friends like Alvin Plantinga and Richard Swinburne and other were Christians. But there's also another type of non-believer, call him an atheist or an agnostic if you want, who says, look, I could see how there might be good things that could be associated with God. If God does exist, maybe there'd be truth, goodness, and beauty. Maybe there'd be life after death. Maybe there would be meaning to life. Maybe I could be reconciled with my loved ones. But I just can't, that's just pie in the sky by and by. There's no good reason to think that's true. And I have then proposed and suggested that maybe in our apologetics, we should focus on both. We should make a case for the reasonableness of Christianity, why it is possible and even probable that God exists, or maybe even more than that. But I think we also should make a case for the goodness of Christianity, that Christianity has been a good force in the world, and you should actually be thankful for Christianity. In fact, if I could mention an atheist who has kind of impeccable credentials as a non-believer, Richard Dawkins. Dawkins has said that in his mind, Western civilization is very fortunate that it had the religion of Christianity instead of the religion of Islam. So now that's kind of a backhanded compliment, I think he is intending, but I think he is saying, you know, there are some good things in Western civilization, and they are probably there because of Christianity. I mean, Oxford University is a pretty profound educational institution, and it was, after all, founded on the basis of Christianity. So guys, what I'd like to do is I want to touch on very quickly why I think you should believe in God rationally, but then I want to almost immediately shift gears and talk about the goodness of Christianity. So I'm intending this podcast to touch those two types of non-believers.
All right. Terrific.
Well, let me then raise the question. Somebody asked me recently, do I have a good reason? Can I give a good and succinct reason why I believe in God and the truth of Christianity? And this is what I said to them. I sent an email, and I'm just going to read that to you. This is what I said. Again, the person says, what's your reason to believe? And this is what I said. I said, my fundamental reason for accepting historic Christianity as true rests on Christian theism's worldview, explanatory power, and scope. The historic Christian worldview accounts for an array of realities in nature and in human experience, including the universe, abstract entities, ethics, human beings, and religious phenomena, especially the unique character claims and credentials of Jesus Christ. So that's kind of my little comment. If somebody asks me, you know, why do you believe? I think that's what I would say. I think that's really the best summary that I could give. And I just want to touch on some of those, and then we'll shift again toward the topic of the goodness of Christianity. You know, what does Christianity explain? Well, I think the Christian story explains the cosmos, why it had a beginning, why it's ordered, its complex fine-tuning. Why are all the dials set just right to allow for the fundamental constants of physics? Seems to me the Christian story does a good job of explaining the cosmos. But how about my life? Human consciousness, free agency, meaning in life. It seems that Christianity has a good explanation for human existence. I would then shift to ethics. I know there are certain things that are right and there are certain things that are wrong. I don't need anybody to tell me that. And anybody who would tell me that it's okay to murder innocent people, that's just preposterous. Of course it is. There are prescriptive, objective moral principles. And again, I don't need to take a philosophy class to know that. I know that because I'm a human being. How about abstractions? You know, there are these things like numbers and propositions and logic and universals. I think the Christian worldview does a good job of explaining these abstract elements. And then finally, religion. I have an awareness of God. There have been times where I have had an encounter with God. So my worldview does a good job of explaining my religiosity, but it also does a great job of explaining the person of Jesus, the Bible itself. Now, I summarize all that in the word clear, C-L-E-A-R, C, cosmos, L, life, E, ethics, A, abstractions, and R, religion. So those are my rational reasons. I think I can marshal scientific support for belief in God, philosophical support for belief in God. I think I can even use mathematics as an argument for God. You know, all of those kinds of things. But I want to pause for a moment just to see if you want to interact with that. And then I'll shift to why I think Christianity is a good thing.
Go ahead, Joe.
No, I was just going to say, sounds good. I'm tracking so far. Go ahead, Dave.
Well, I was just going to say, one of the things that I've run up against multiple times is the point that actually Dawkins plays on a lot, which is their view of the Old Testament God and what he's like in their view, what he's done, what he's supposedly sanctioned in their view, murder of innocents. And you know, they'll make an analogy or comparison with, say, what we view today, the kind of murder that goes on within various dictatorships in order to retain their position, and or within, say, the radical Islam, you know, the beheading of people. And we're, you know, totally against that kind of thing that goes on there. And so they say, how can you be against that and then allow that God in the Old Testament would carry on the same kinds of activities? So to them, it's just, that's one of the barriers that they just can't get over.
Yeah, interestingly enough, in my new book, Christianity Cross-Examined, in the second half of that book, I not only talk about the good things, why is Christianity so good, but Dave, I also address the very topic you're mentioning here. I look at how about all the people killed in the name of God? Of course, I add to it, what about all the people killed in the name of no God?
Right.
I look at the question of God's command to execute the Canaanites, and I explore that. I look at, does the Bible condone slavery? I look at other, what about hypocrisy? So, you know, as we think about these, on one side, here are these arguments, the rational arguments to believe, but helpfully pointed out that when you're talking about why is Christianity so good, there's the one side of what Christianity has done, but what about the things that Christianity has done that are not so good? And one of the things that I point out is I think, and I make a case, that I think a lot of times the accusations about God and about Christianity, their negative influence in the world, that it has been exaggerated. And that often the good things about Christianity have not been, you know, set forth. So what I'd like to do, Dave, is I want to talk now about what I think Christianity has. I want to tell you why I think Christianity is so good. And then maybe at the end, we can kind of come back to your topic about the so-called offensive things that have been done either in the name of God or to some degree by God. So here it is. Has Christianity been a good force for good in the world? Well, this is my summary. I'm going to say the Christian worldview has been the catalyst behind many, if not most, of the great advancements in Western civilization. That is, I don't think we'd have the world we live in Western civilization without the Christian faith. It's been the mover and shaker behind virtually all of the great advancements in our Western world. Now, where does this force for good come from? Well, the doctrine of the Imago Dei led to the founding of Europeans' great university system and hospitals, and also stimulated the growth of the arts. That is the educational systems of the Western world, and the health systems, the hospitals, and the arts. They didn't just pop into existence out of nowhere. These are the implications of the biblical teaching that people are made in the image of God. And of course, I immediately need to recognize that Christians share the Old Testament with Jews. And the Imago Dei is an Old Testament teaching. It is also a teaching of Judaism. It's not exclusively the property of Christianity. But I think Christians have taken that Jewish truth and drawn out the implications that if people are made in the image of God, then they need to be well educated, and we need to care for people because they really matter, because they're made in the image of God. And because they're made in the image of God, they're capable of tremendous creativity and artistic elements. So Christianity motivated advancements in political liberty, economics, the sanctity of human life, and social justice. I mean, the very things that we're debating today, shouldn't people have political liberty? And what about economics? Why do some people have more than others? And what kind of economic theory will actually raise all boats? And what about the sanctity of human life? What about the unborn? What about older people who have Alzheimer's? Why should we care for them? And why should we care about social justice? I think all of these things that we care about, we actually care about because Christianity told us we should care about them. So it seems ironic to me that people want to raise issues of whether Christianity is good when the very issues that we care about come from Christianity. Let me also say, Christianity's robust view of creation supported the launch of modern science. So you have Richard Dawkins, you have Lawrence Krauss, you have Peter Atkins. These are all outspoken, very distinguished scientists who are outspoken in their unbelief. They believe that we ought to get rid of Christianity and just adopt a scientific worldview. But what they don't seem to appreciate is that it was the biblical view of creation that led to the launch of modern science. Now, let me give you a little detail here. I've been kind of speaking generally, but let me give you some more specific details. I want to talk about Christianity's positive contributions to the world. And I want to mention education and literature. So that'll be the first area. You know, in the medieval era, Christians copied manuscripts and they built libraries. In our world, we have literacy all around us. We are the beneficiary of books and magazines. We're readers and thinkers, and we put all this data and we put it even on the internet so people can use this remarkable technology. But the reality is that it was the medieval era, and specifically Christians, that copied manuscripts. And they built libraries, and they did so because they thought that truth and ideas and words and languages had, great value. And remember that in the Middle Ages, it was not easy to reproduce somebody's work. We're talking about people writing by hand, sometimes writing on primitive paper, other times on animal skins. To reproduce all of these things so that education and literature could be set forth. Now, let me mention some specifics here. The Christian worldview, the Christian consensus, that led to the founding of the European medieval universities. So I'm talking about Oxford and Cambridge, the College of Sorbonne, the University of Vienna, Charles University in Prague, the University of St. Andrews, etc. That is, these are universities that come out of the Middle Ages. And the Middle Ages in Western civilization is dominated by the Christian world and life view. And what's interesting, of course, is the intellectual firepower that led to the the scientific revolution in the 1600s, well, all of that came out of the European medieval Christian universities. There is no Western civilization. There is no science. There is really no education in literature that is not, to some degree, connected to this kind of Christian perspective. And so, again, a couple years ago, Dave and I went on a trip to England with the RTB group, and one of the places we spent time at was Oxford University. And I remember walking around with the group, and I just kept telling myself, Ken, this university is almost 1,000 years old. This university extends all the way back into the Middle Ages. And is there a more important, could you think of two more important universities than Oxford and Cambridge? Well, they're birthed in the worldview context of Christianity, that people are made in the image of God. They have intellectual ability. They can know this, they can know things about this world. And so education and learning and literacy have deep roots within Christianity. Now, I can also shift to the United States, because that's the country that I live in. But in the United States, Christians founded or played a significant role in founding America's Ivy League institutions. You know, there's 9 Supreme Court justices. 7 of them are Catholic, 2 are Jewish, but most of them come from the law schools of Harvard or Yale or Princeton or Columbia or Brown or Dartmouth. Again, these schools have long ago lost their Christian distinctiveness, but you still recognize the Christianity because Harvard has its own seminary. Yale and Princeton have their own seminaries. Why would you have a seminary at a university? Well, because that university was a Christian college. Now again, we live a couple hundred years later than the birthing of these universities. And we may see today very clearly that places like Harvard and Yale and even Princeton, they're very secular. But what's interesting is they have deep Christian roots, and the excellence of these schools is still evident today. Most of the Supreme Court justices have their law degrees from the Ivy League. Now, that, again, I think tells you about the kind of influence that these schools had, and the kind of key ideas that were reflected in these schools. Imagine education and literature in the Western world without Christianity. I can't.
Let me ask a question here. How do you explain that these universities, the individuals in there who no longer subscribe to the Christian faith, many, in fact, are either agnostics or atheists, can still carry on the intellectual progress and efforts that are going on within, do the science, for instance, without them individually believing in the Christian faith?
That's a great question, Dave. My answer to that question is that I think we're dealing with borrowed capital. For example, in your particular area of science, I mean, you have a doctoral degree from a leading math science school, Caltech, here in Southern California. What's interesting is if you went back 300 years, you would see the very close association between the Christian worldview and the emergence of science. But that's been 300 years. And slowly and gradually, the philosophical worldview ideas that promoted science, which are deeply related to Christianity, there has been a disconnect. And I, Dave, in my opinion, and you can tell me what you think, I think most scientists are probably not aware of the close association to the practice of science to the philosophical and religious ideas that led to its birth. So a lot, when I talk with a lot of scientists, both Christian and non-Christian, they say, hey, science works. Science has changed the world. But they don't seem aware that the founding ideas that promoted what is, Alistair McGrath, the great theologian and scientist at Oxford University, he says that, Christianity deeply influenced the birth of science. So I think that, I don't know, I think that we've become more of a pragmatic world. We have become more of a secular world. I think these ideas were slow in its development, but we live in, I think, a more pragmatic and in a much more secular world. And I also don't think that a lot of people are as literate as they should be. Let's again take your field, Dave. I think the specialization in science is so strong that you don't have enough time to study the humanities or to study the other natural views, the social sciences. So to some degree, I think we've kind of taken Western civilization and Christianity, which is the foundation for it, for granted. So what's so good about Christianity? Well, we've touched on very simply education and literature. Learning is deeply rooted from a Western perspective. Joe, do you want to jump in there?
You're turned off, Joe.
No, just tracking with you. I appreciate it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I was just going to add that it's remarkable that I guess Christians had the foresight to establish, these learning centers, and look what's become of them. I mean, these are, some of the great, you mentioned those schools by name. They're just remarkable in the respect that they've garnered internationally. So thankfully we have that heritage there. So let's hope that continues.
Well, let's then shift to another area, looking at Christianity's very positive contributions to the world. Let's look at social movements. I want to talk a little bit about slavery. And one of the things I want to say about slavery is that according to Gleason Archer, who was a distinguished Old Testament scholar, he was also an attorney, had a degree from Harvard University. Archer was a big supporter of Reasons to Believe. He thought the young earth view was not consistent with scripture. He thought the old earth view was the only way to make sense of it. But Archer, in one of his books, says that slavery was practiced by every culture in the ancient world, by the Egyptians, by the Canaanites in Mesopotamia, the Romans, the Greeks, that slavery permeated the ancient world. It was part of the economic system. It was part of the political system, and it was practiced by all people. Now we of course think largely of slavery in our way of thinking as being the enslavement of African Americans, but African Americans also practiced slavery. Well, Christian activists, and here I'm thinking about people like William Wilberforce in England. I'm thinking about other individuals among the Quaker denomination and others that led to the movement to abolish slavery in Britain and in America, that made it illegal. So this is a practice that's been around as far back as we go, namely slavery. And the illegality, the making of slavery to be illegal. Now, we can't say that slavery is completely gone because it still exists in one degree or another even today, but it's illegal. And it became illegal in Great Britain and in America by the work of Christians. William Wilberforce, dates 1759 to 1833, played a very significant role in moving Great Britain to reject slavery as an immoral practice, and that it should be condemned. And again, it's Christian leaders. I'm sure you could say, well, of course, there were a lot of Christians in those days. but I think there's a particular reason why religious people, namely Christian people, were unhappy with slavery, because all people are made in the image of God. And to enslave a person is not compatible with the moral teaching that people are made in God's image and there have inherent dignity and moral worth. Well, Christians have advanced science. They've promoted economic freedom. They've led efforts for women's suffrage. They've fostered justice. They've inspired the civil rights movement. I mean, I'm old enough to remember that most of the leaders of the civil rights movement in the United States in the late 50s and in the early 60s, they were Christians. There were Black leaders like Martin Luther King, but many others who had deep roots within Christianity. King was himself a Baptist minister. His sermons are filled with statements from the Old Testament that say that Yahweh cares about the widows and the orphans and the immigrants. The basic perspective was that there should be an equality of all people, and that equality is based on the idea that all people are children of God. All people are made in God's image. This whole idea of justice. Now, again, we have differing ideas. I don't know that justice always equates with fairness or are equivalent of fairness. But the idea that human beings have value and dignity, and therefore that there should be some sense of justice, this has deep roots in the Judeo-Christian Bible.
Yeah. Ken, I have a question regarding this topic of enslaving human beings or human trafficking. If I'm tracking with you, it looks like you're saying that Christianity has been a force for good, and this is one of those ways it has been so by helping rid the areas where Christianity has had an influence of slavery. Now, in those parts of the world where it seems that human trafficking is more pronounced than others, would you say that they lack a Christian influence? And maybe that's why we see human trafficking in parts of Asia, for example. There could be other places as well, but the way I see it is a lot of that occurs in some of those poorer nations around the globe.
I think so, Joe. I think there, when we think about cultural ideas and we think about the big ideas, we connect Christianity largely to Western civilization. That's not completely true. Christianity has influenced Africa and Asia. And of course, today we see some of the countries with the largest Christian populations being in, places like China. Even India, you have Africa, South Africa, and various places, you have a growing Christian population, but not all worldviews, Joe, and not all religions have the same idea that people are made in the image of God, have inherent dignity and moral worth. I mean, think of the outrage. I mean, think of it just for a minute. Think about people who actually kidnap young children, boys and girls, for the very purpose of enslaving them in a life of sexuality, forced rape. I mean, think of that. And yet it happens more than we would like to consider. But a lot of these ideas are, you know, in the world, not everybody holds human beings to have dignity and value. And yet, as much as we talk about racial issues today, as much as we talk about social justice today, Christianity has been at the forefront of trying to ensure that people have a fair shake in life, that they're valuable and they're meaningful. Now, let me shift simply because I want to get as much of this content in. Another area we can look is at law and government. Judeo-Christian religious traditions have deeply influenced the democratic governments and the judicial systems of the Western world. You know, the equality of each individual person has been strongly influenced by the biblical idea that people are made in God's image. I think of the Declaration of Independence, that people have rights that they derive from their creator, not from their government. You know, Thomas Jefferson, the founding fathers of our nation, they had not only read, you know, Plato and Aristotle, but they also had read the Bible. And the idea that people have dignity and they have value. Now, they weren't perfect. You know, America, the antebellum slavery in largely in the southern parts of America still existed. And some of the founding fathers had slaves. And so you could say that, you know, America had a charter and it wasn't living completely consistent with it. But it is these ideas about the dignity of and the value of human beings, and because they're made in the image of God, that kings should not rule over with force, but people should have a say. And so we get our rights from a creator, not from individual governments. We can talk about charity and philanthropy. In the ancient world, Christians elevated morality. They halted infanticide, created hospitals, established orphanages, and founded schools. Modern Christian leaders have started numerous charitable organizations. Just a few: Mother Teresa, Missionaries of Charity, William and Catherine Booth, the Salvation Army. I give money to the Salvation Army. It is a theological denomination. I don't share all of their theological views, but I support them because they change people's lives. George Williams, the YMCA, Young Men's Christian Association. You know, again, some of these charitable organizations may not have the same religious roots that they once had, but they're founded by Christians. So when I was a kid and today, I'd see the Salvation Army trucks drive through the neighborhood. Catholic Charities, one of the largest charities in the country. I remember St. Vincent de Paul collecting goods, giving to the poor. So has Christianity been a force for good? Well, evangelical writer and pastor George Grant, he sums up how the Christian worldview motivated and impacted the actions of missionaries. Listen to what he says. Again, this is George Grant. He says, quote, "They established hospitals. They, Christians, founded orphanages. They started rescue missions. They built almshouses. They opened up soup kitchens. They incorporated charitable societies. They changed laws, they demonstrated love, and here's that last comment, they lived as if people mattered." We have a whole political a social movement called Black Lives Matter. Well, Christianity has argued that all people matter, and they matter because they're made in the image of God. So, you know, these kinds of things are often not appreciated. Now, I'm going to argue, when you live it out authentically, the Christian world and life view produces practical, beneficial results, both for citizens and civilization. And therefore, I think we can make a really good case for why Christianity has been good for the world, especially for Western civilization. And that Christianity is both reasonable and it's good. You know, Dave, sometimes people do raise various issues, but Christianity largely has been involved in putting an end to slavery. And, you know, Christianity has also been involved in trying to resolve conflicts. And so I want to bring us back to where we started by simply saying that I think if there are non-believers who have objections to the reasonableness of Christianity and have questions about the goodness of Christianity, that we can marshal a case in both areas. Mm. We can marshal a case that Christianity is both reasonable and good. And I think people who lived in the past would have known that, but I think we live more at a time where many of the foundations of Western civilization have moved beyond kind of the religious considerations. And guys, that's what I do in my book. In my book, Christianity Cross-Examined, the first half of the book makes a case why it's reasonable to believe in Christianity. So I appeal to science, I appeal to logic, I appeal to history. The second half, I try to make a case that Christianity is good, addressing things like slavery, addressing deaths and war in the name of God, addressing what Yahweh was doing when he commanded the execution of the Canaanites. And so I'm trying to hit that on both fronts. And I think probably, whether we like it or not, I think apologists have to do this now. I don't think we can spend all our time on the rationality of Christianity. I think given the cultural milieu, I think we have to make a case for why Christianity is good, why the evils of Christianity have been exaggerated, and why the goodness has been unfortunately ignored or limited.
A couple of comments. I've mentioned this before, but there's a book, actually two different books, written by a guy named Vishal Mangalawadi. He's an Indian, grew up in India, became a Christian, has been trained and served as a minister and a worker in the field of Christianity in India. And he wrote a book called Why the Book That Made Your World is the one that I first read. And he's written a second one called This Book Changed Everything. And what he's referring to is, of course, the Bible. And in these two books, he's just enumerating all the ways, like you have, Ken, of how Christianity has been good and all the benefits that have been derived from it in the world that we live in today. So I highly recommend it as a source of information along this line. Just the second comment with regard to my question a little earlier about the atheist being so upset with the God of the Old Testament and the things that he supposedly did that they consider as anathema. What I find remarkable, and I'd be interested in your comments on this, is that they're the very ones who accuse God of not dealing with evil in the world. Why does he not, if there is a God who's good and all powerful, why does he allow all the evil to go on? And they use this as an argument for there is no God. And yet when the God of the Old Testament did deal with evil, they get all bent out of shape about it.
Right. No, I think you're touching on something that I develop in my book, where I make that very point that, you know, the Canaanite nation, I mean, they were involved with child sacrifice. They had a religion that was decadent. God gave them 400 years to repent. And then he decided, okay, I'm going to have a large scale capital punishment. I'm going to bring judgment upon these evildoers. Child sacrifice, child prostitution as part of their religious worship. This was a decadent society. And you're right. If God didn't do anything, then probably people would say, well, he had the power to do it and he didn't do it, so maybe he doesn't exist. And I think you're raising a good point. And again, it is a point I try to bring out in Christianity Cross-Examined. And that is, you need to make a fair case for and against God. And a lot of the things that we consider bad, Christianity is the one who taught us to give moral considerations to those kinds of things. I mean, the very reason the Canaanite situation bothers us is because we have taken for granted that people have dignity and value. So I do think that's the case. And I think that probably our apologetic needs to continue to go in that way. I think we need to continue to make a case for the rationality of Christianity, appealing to science, appealing to logic, appealing to math, appealing to history. But we also need to make a case for why it's really good that you have lived in a Christian civilization, or that you are the beneficiaries of Christian civilization. And that means cashing out that Christianity has helped the West in terms of economics, in terms of literature, in terms of science, in terms of social justice. And, whether we like it or not, people don't make deep connections to history. I mean, where are we going in the world in which we live today? If I were, all three of my kids are raised, they are all adults. But I was talking to my wife the other day, and we were thinking, what if we had small kids? Who's going to educate our children? Do I want the public schools to do it? Well, I don't know. If the public schools are filled with postmodernism and all of these philosophies that I think are incoherent, I might take different choices. So I think Dave and Joe, Christianity has a deep root in history, and a lot of people living today don't know a lot about history.
Well, I appreciate the exhortation to continue to learn these things, Ken. I think your book will be important. So when that comes out, we'll be recommending it, and I'm sure we'll be talking about it some more as we go forward. But that'll be something everybody should have on their list coming out very soon, Ken's book, Christianity Cross-Examined. Ken, I wanted to read another comment that's come in, and we encourage people to reach you at RTB_case samples and let us know what's on your mind. Here's one that's come in a little bit on the longer side, but it's a good one, so I'll read it. Ken, I am 42 years old and accepted Christ at age 24 after coming to the understanding of how lost I am in my sin, and that the only remedy was the God-man, Jesus Christ, through his substitutionary atoning sacrifice. My sin is deep, but his mercy is deeper. I was introduced to you and your team just under 2 years ago after God answered my prayer for more revelation as I was wrestling with the explanation of why I believe what I believe about historic Christianity. I became hooked, so to speak, with how our triune God is using apologetic speakers and great minds such as yourself and many others to help strengthen the faith of people like me. Little did I know that God was preparing me to support my family, specifically my parents, after my brother committed suicide in October 2019. Your personal story continues to resonate with me. Our God has used your testimony and teaching. Due to this, I've been able to read two of your books, God Among Sages and Seven Truths, two of Dr. Ross's books, and C.S. Lewis's Mere Christianity, and two books by Greg Kokel and Dr. Habermas, as well as saturate myself with yours and others' apologetic podcasts. So I am thankful for you for continuing to answer God's call in your life to speak to those like myself, David Dixon.
Wow.
Oh, that's quite a compliment there.
That's a great note. And we like to hear your feedback. As Joe mentions, you can contact me, and I enjoy interacting. And so, Dave and Joe, that's with our 400 podcasts of Straight Thinking, I think we're doing some good. We're a good force in the world.
It's not a total loss, huh?
That's right.
And occasionally, okay, we're even rational.
Yeah.
So let us know what's on your mind at @RTB_KSamples. This podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Look for the Reasons to Believe podcast, and you'll find Straight Thinking there. For Ken Samples and Dave Rockstead, this is Joe Aguirre with a reminder that the goal of apologetics is not victory, but truth. Thanks for listening, and join us for the next edition of Straight Thinking.
Thank you for listening. Your prayers and financial support are reaching people with reasons for faith in Jesus Christ, our Creator and Savior. To allow Reasons to Believe programs like this to continue, make your gift today at reasons.org.